from Jakarta, Indonesia. Here is Voice of Indonesia with English program. Presenting news, information, and entertainment from Indonesia. You can listen to our program through shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz. Online streaming, voanews.id, and RRI Digital Mobile Application. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world. From RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world. You are listening to the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, and today we are having a lot of things that you can access on 3325 kHz, 4755 kHz, and our online streaming, voanews.id, and application RRI Digital. I'm Steve, and get ready for more information about Indonesia. Here's the news first day headlines. Indonesia and Singapore signed 26 pacts. Indonesian Foreign Minister and House Speaker to attend Ali Khamenei's funeral, and here is the news in detail. Indonesia and Singapore signed 26 agreements across a wide range of sectors during Singapore Prime Minister Lawrence Wong's meeting with Indonesian President Prabowo Subianto in Jakarta on Monday, including on green energy. Rama Shirky Pratama has more.
The meeting at the Merdeka Place was part of the annual Leaders' Retreat, where the two countries discussed priority issues of mutual interest. In a joint press statement, President Prabowo said the agreements reflected the broad scope of cooperation between the two neighboring countries.
Sebagaimana tadi disaksikan, pertemuan kali ini menghasilkan 26.
As we have witnessed today, this meeting has produced 26 tangible achievements across various sectors, 18 government-to-government agreements, and 8 business-to-business agreements. These achievements reflect the growing breadth and depth of our cooperation.
Capaian-capaian ini mencerminkan semakin luas dan mendalam kerjasama kita.
Among the agreements signed were those covering cross-border electricity trade, digital infrastructure, carbon credits, defense cooperation, and green energy investment. Prime Minister Wong said Singaporean companies are interested in investing in Indonesia, including in a solar power project in Morowali, Central Sulawesi.
Recent developments in the Middle East have reminded us of the importance of energy security and diversification. Indonesia has tremendous potential in renewable energy, and Singapore would like to partner Indonesia in unlocking this potential. That's why we are jointly constructing one of Indonesia's largest solar projects in Morowali in Central Sulawesi. This will unlock a clean supply of electricity to power industries there.
Singapore is also interested in establishing a student exchange program with Indonesia's Garuda Schools, a government initiative to create boarding high schools that prepare talented students in science and technology. On the same occasion, Indonesia and Singapore are also guaranteed safe and open passage through the Strait of Malacca. Rama Sidki Pratama, Voice of Indonesia.
Indonesian Minister of Energy and Mineral Resources Bahlil Hadalia revealed that price negotiations for Indonesia's electricity exports to Singapore is still ongoing. He revealed that following the leaders' retreat between Indonesian President Prabowo Subianto and Singaporean Prime Minister Lawrence Wong at Merdeka Palace, Jakarta yesterday. Although a memorandum of understanding is yet to be agreed upon, Indonesia continues to prioritize a fair economic value. Minister Badil said a final agreement will only be reached if the export price can provide balanced benefits for both countries.
Well, related to electricity exports to Singapore, the process is moving forward, but we're still negotiating the price. And under our regulations, pricing is determined by our government. We want a win-win situation that's mutually beneficial. Cooperation must be mutually beneficial. So, since it's mutually beneficial, we just need to reach that point. Once discussions are underway, but I think we'll find common ground soon.
Previously, Prime Minister Wong said Indonesia and Singapore are currently collaborating on the construction of Indonesia's largest solar power project in Morowali, Central Sulawesi. This collaboration was further strengthened by the signing of the MOU between Indonesia's investment management agency Danantara and several Singaporean energy companies, including Keppel Electric, Sembcorp Industries, and Singapore Energy Interconnections. The document will serve as the official guideline for moving forward with this cross-border power project. The Indonesian government plans to send Foreign Minister Sugiono and Speaker of People's Consultative Assembly Ahmad Muzani to attend the funeral of Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. More detail by Desi Anugranov.
Foreign Minister Sugiono and Speaker of the People's Consultative Assembly Ahmad Muzani are scheduled to attend the funeral of Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei as a gesture of respect and to maintain the close ties between Indonesia and the Islamic Republic of Iran. Minister Sugiono made the remarks after welcoming Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi to Jakarta on Monday afternoon, July 6, 2026. However, he said the Indonesian government is still awaiting a confirmation from the Iranian authorities regarding time and venue where the Indonesian delegation will be able to attend the funeral ceremonies.
Kita berencana akan hadir. Ini kami masih menunggu jawaban, waktu, dan...
We are planning to attend. We are still waiting for confirmation regarding the time and location where we can attend the funeral ceremony. As we know, there are several stages in the funeral procession. Through our ongoing communication, we understand that public respect for him is immense, and the crowds are expected to be very large. Therefore, the Iranian authorities are still trying to determine the most suitable location to receive foreign delegations.
Minister Sugiono explained that Indonesia had previously received an invitation to attend the funeral ceremonies and initially informed the Iranian government that Indonesia's ambassador to Iran, Rolyansa Sumirat, would represent the country. The decision was made after considering several technical factors, including the busy domestic schedule of the key government officials. However, the government leaders received confirmation from Iran that one of the ceremonies would only be accessible of official above ambassadorial rank. Following further coordination with the Iranian authorities, Indonesia decided to send a high-level delegation led by Foreign Minister Sugiono and the People's Consultative Assembly Speaker Ahmad Muzani to attend the funeral on Thursday, July 9, 2026.
We later received confirmation that the Iranian authorities would only grant access to officials above ambassador level.
According to Iran's state news agency IRNA, the body of Ayatollah Ali Khamenei was transferred to Grand Mosala in Tehran on Friday morning, July 3, 2026. The body was then placed in the mosque's main hall for the two-day public farewell ceremony. The mourning ceremonies continued to Sunday, July 5, before the next stage of the funeral procession began on Monday, July 6, 2026. The funeral procession will then continue in the city of Qom. Spirit ceremonies in Baghdad, Karbala, and Najaf in Iraq. The final burial is scheduled to take place in Mashhad on Thursday, July 9, 2026. Desi Anugrano, Voice of Indonesia.
Indonesia and India strengthen cooperation in the field of higher education and human resource development through the signing of an agreement. This partnership is expected to strengthen the development of Indonesian talent, while also making the Singhasari Special Economic Zone a center for international education in ASEAN. Kiki Purba has the details.
Indonesia and India strengthen their strategic partnership in higher education through the signing of a Memorandum of Understanding between Indonesia, PT Intelligentsia Grahatama, As the developer and manager of the Singhasari Special Economic Zone and the Indian Institute of Management Bangalore, IIM Bangalore in Jakarta Monday. The secretary of the Indonesian Coordinating Minister for Economic Affairs, who is also chairman of the National Special Economic Zone Council Implementation Team, Susi Wijono Mogiarso, stated that Indonesia needs superior human resources to achieve the national economic growth target of 8%. According to him, the presence of IIM Bangalore strengthened the transformation of Singhasari Special Economic Zone into a center for innovations, educations, and international talent development.
Singhasari SEC, as Indonesian first zone dedicated to the digital economy, education, and technology, is steadily becoming an international hub for innovation, talent development, and today, with IIM Bangalore reflecting a broader shift in Indonesia SEC, from industrial estates to innovation ecosystem that integrated investment, education, technology, research, and talent development to lasting economic value.
Meanwhile, the Indian ambassador to Indonesia, Sandeep Chakraforty, stated that this cooperation is a manifestation of the commitment of both countries to provide world-class management education in Indonesia. The program developed by IIM Bangalore will be tailored to Indonesia's needs, especially in future strategic fields.
We are getting the very best of India to Indonesia. The management program that will be run out of IIM Bangalore Singhasari will be tuned to the needs of Indonesia. It will be in areas such as AI, data sciences, health sector management, amongst others.
The cooperation signs coinciding with Indonesia Prime Minister Narendra Modi's visit to Indonesia serve as the foundations for the development of international standard management education at Singhasari SEC. Its implementation will be carried out gradually through executive education program, leadership training, and the development of diploma and degree granting or global MBA program. Kiki Purba, Voice of Indonesia.
Indonesian Ministry of Culture is preparing a series of strategic measures to strengthen the country's role in UNESCO after officially taking over the management of Indonesian National Commission for UNESCO. Minister of Culture Fadli Zon said the transfer marks an important opportunity to enhance coordination and expand Indonesia's contribution to UNESCO's various programs. More detail by Ofra.
The handover took place during the signing ceremony for the transfer of the Commission Secretariat in Jakarta on Monday, July 6th. Minister of Culture Fadli Zon said the transfer provides an important opportunity to improve cross-sector coordination while strengthening Indonesia's contribution to UNESCO's programs and international forums.
With the issuance of the presidential regulation and the Indonesian National Commission for UNESCO's new mandate, God willing, we will strengthen coordination across all UNESCO-related areas in Indonesia, improve the quality of Indonesia's nominations to UNESCO programs, reinforce the implementation of UNESCO conventions, expand the use of digital technology in UNESCO programs, support the development of the ethics of artificial intelligence, education for sustainable development, and open science, while also optimizing Indonesia's role on the UNESCO Executive Board for the 2023 to 2027 term. Through these efforts, our contribution will become even more significant.
Fadli Zon added that the Ministry of Culture will continue the programs previously managed by the Ministry of Primary and Secondary Education while strengthening coordination among ministries and government institutions. He expressed hope that these efforts would improve the quality of Indonesia's nominations to UNESCO programs and further enhance the country's contribution to the organization's various initiatives.
The Indonesian government launched the Indonesian Forestry Carbon Hub in Jakarta on Monday. This launch represents the government's effort to build a transparent, technology-enabled carbon market while accelerating emission reductions from the forestry sector. Forestry Minister Raja Juli Antoni said the platform aims to strengthen forestry governance and ensure Indonesia's carbon integrity. This is being done in collaboration with the Integrity Council for the Voluntary Carbon Market, which will oversee the implementation of the voluntary carbon market to prevent carbon leakage and ensure accurate emission measurement and calculation methods. He hopes the step will maintain Indonesia's high carbon integrity credibility while strengthening forestry sector governance.
Furthermore, to maintain our good forest governance, our high carbon integrity, we have collaborated with the ICVCM. The Integrity Council for the Voluntary Carbon Market will also monitor us to ensure there is no carbon leakage and that our measurement methods are correct.
The establishment of Indonesian Forestry Carbon Hub is part of the government's efforts to build a credible, integrated forestry carbon ecosystem capable of providing economic benefits while maintaining the function of forests as absorbers of greenhouse gas emissions. Furthermore, on July 9th, the government is scheduled to launch the Carbon Unit Registry System as the main infrastructure for national carbon trading. The system will serve as a platform for registering, recording, and managing Indonesia's carbon units while strengthening the transparency, accountability, and integrity of national carbon market. Listener, that was the news. Coming up next is commentary titled Price Determines Energy Partnership by Anna Trijayakasi.
The planned electricity export cooperation between Indonesia and Singapore has the potential to be a significant step in the development of clean energy in Southeast Asia. However, the two countries are still negotiating the agreed electricity price. This indicates that the success of the cooperation depends not only on the signing of a memorandum of understanding, but also on reaching an agreement that provides balanced benefits for both parties. The outcome of the price negotiations will be crucial in determining the sustainability of the two countries' energy partnership. Price negotiations need to produce an agreement that reflects mutual interest. Indonesia has significant potential in renewable energy development, while Singapore is strengthening cooperation through the development of cross-border power projects. Therefore, the agreed price will not only determine the value of electricity trade, but will also influence investment feasibility, trust between partners, and opportunities for developing further energy cooperation. A balanced agreement can strengthen confidence that cross-border energy projects can deliver long-term benefits. Ultimately, the success of this cooperation will not only be measured by the price agreement reached, but also by the benefits generated for both countries and the region. The Indonesian and Singaporean governments need to ensure the negotiation process is transparent and results in a sustainable partnership. If achieved, this collaboration could serve as a benchmark developing cross-border green energy collaboration in Southeast Asia. That was commentary.
tak ada. Tapi takkan merubah perasaanku kepadamu. Ku yakin pasti suatu saat semua akan terjadi. Kau kan mencintaiku dan tak akan pernah melepasku.
Voice of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republic Indonesia, broadcast in 9 language services: English, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, and Indonesian. Voice of Indonesia is broadcast via shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz and via streaming on voanews.id and RRI Digital on mobile application. We present various programs for you: Diplomatic Forum, The Session, Indonesian Wonder, Miscellany, Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian Pop and Regional Songs, International Musical Entertainment, as well as news and information about Indonesia and abroad. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
diberikan, berharap hidupku bahagia. Aku baik-baik saja, menikmati hidup yang aku punya. Hidupku sangat sempurna. I'm single and very happy, mengejar mimpi-mimpi indah. Bebas lakukan yang aku suka, pasangan jiwaku pada waktu dan cara yang indah. Aku baik-baik saja, menikmati hidup yang aku punya. Hidupku sangat sempurna. I'm single and very happy, mengejar mimpi-mimpi indah. Bebas lakukan yang aku suka, saja. I'm single and very happy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm single and very happy. I'm single and very happy.
Listener, coming up next is Soccer Fiesta of Round of 16 with the Ambassador of Egypt to Indonesia.
Hello, Bolisro. Welcome back to Soccer Fiesta. And today I have another honorable guest. Today I have the Ambassador of Egypt to Indonesia. We have Mr. Yasser Elshemi. Did I say that name right?
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for receiving me today. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Nuka. How are you, Mr.
Alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillah. Thank you so much.
Alhamdulillah. And of course, we all know that we are here. We are going to talk about World Cup. And Egypt is actually on the 16th round, right?
Indeed, indeed.
So if Argentina have Messi, Egypt have Mo Salah. Okay, so this is really interesting, because who do you think will dominate the match, the first match between Egypt and Argentina?
Nuka, thank you so much for receiving me today. I'm very happy to be in the radio of Indonesia. So Argentina has one of the greatest players in football history. And Egypt has a player who has carried the hopes of millions with pride and exceptional talent. But football is not only about one player, it's about the team, the spirit, the preparation, and the confidence to deliver under pressure. We have great respect for Messi and Argentina, but we also have a full confidence in Mo Salah and in every Egyptian player. I hope the match will be dominated by a good football, fair play, and the passion that makes the World Cup so special.
Yes, it is. And if you win this, you'll be in the quarterfinal. What Egypt cannot do wrong in this round of 16?
I think at this stage, the smallest details matter. Egypt cannot afford to lose concentration, especially against a team like Argentina. We need discipline, organization, courage, and belief from the first minute until the final whistle. Most importantly, Egypt must play with confidence, not fear. Reaching this stage is already historic, but the players must not feel satisfied. They have earned the right to compete, and now they must play with the mentality that they belong here.
Yeah, it is actually, Mr. Ambassador. Well, Egypt is actually never past the group stage, right? And what does reaching round 16 in 2026 means for the Pharaohs?
For Egyptian football, this is not only a result. It's a moment of history. It reflects years of ambition, effort, and belief from the players, the coaching staff, and the Egyptian people who have always supported their national team. For the Pharaohs, to reach the round of 16 sends a powerful message that Egypt is not only here to participate, but to compete. It is a proud moment for every Egyptian and hopefully the beginning of a new chapter of Egyptian football on the global stage.
Yes, it is. And there is only a few the African teams here who are ever made around round 16. And do you feel the pressure to present or represent the whole continent?
Indeed, we feel pride more than pressure. Egypt is proud to represent the country and the continent, but also proud to present Africa and Arab world. This World Cup has been historic, with 8 Arab teams qualifying for the first time and 9 out of 10 African teams reaching the knockout stage. A remarkable achievement for our continent and our region. We also very proud of Cape Verde's remarkable performance against Argentina. They played with courage and gave hope to all of us. Their performances showed that African football is rising and no team should ever be underestimated.
That is right. I agree with you totally. And of course, without the 12 men or supporters, as we all says, we all know that. What would you like to say to all supporters of the Egyptian team in the World Cup today?
To the supporters of Argentina, we have great respect for your football history, your passion, and your distinctive football culture. Argentina is a great football nation. And of course, Messi has a huge fan base across Egypt.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Indeed. But many Egyptians admire him deeply, even when he plays against us. To the supporters of Egypt, your support gives the strength to the people, the players. So let us enjoy this match with pride, respect, and the true spirit of football. Whatever happens, this is a celebration of football and of the emotions that bring people together.
Ah, okay. But Egypt also have, as I said earlier, we have Mo Salah. We also have Marmoush. We also have Mustafa Mohamed, Trezeguet. Don't forget about that one. And who needs a breakout performance to get Egypt to the quarters?
I think at this level, Egypt needs everyone.
Oh, okay.
We have players with great experience, such as Mo Salah, Marmoush, Zizou, Mustafa, Trezeguet. But we also have exciting names and new names coming through this World Cup. So like Haysam Hassan, Hamza Abdelkrim, who's only 18. Imam Ashour, who already scored twice in this tournament.
Yes.
And of course, Mustafa Choubert, our remarkable goalkeeper. What is encouraging in the balance of this squad? Some players compete in a major club abroad, that's like Mo Salah, Marmoush, Haysam Hassan, Hamza Abdelkrim, while the other bring the strengths and the character of Egypt football. But in a match like this, it is not about one name only. It may be a goal, an assist, or a save, or a defensive moment. Egypt needs to complete team performance.
Yeah, it is. And if Egypt win this round of 16, where does this generation rank in the Egyptian football history?
I think if Egypt reached the quarterfinals, this generation will have a very special place in our football history. Egypt has a proud football tradition, especially in Africa, but achieving this on the World Cup stage would be remembered for generations. It would not only be about one match.
Oh, okay.
It would be about changing expectations, inspiring young Egyptian players, and proving that Egyptian football can compete in the global stage. Also, this generation already has the chance to write history and win would make the history unforgettable.
Yes, it is absolutely. So I'm going to ask you a hard question. What is your prediction of the four top team in World Cup?
The World Cup is always difficult to predict.
Okay.
And this edition has already shown that surprises are part of the beauty of the football.
It is.
As an Egyptian, my first hope is to see Egypt continue this journey with confidence,
okay,
discipline, and pride.
Yes.
For now, our full focus is on the next match and on giving everything until the final whistle. And of course, I wish all the teams the very best of luck.
Yes. So Egyptian must have on the fourth team. But if we see Egyptian, you have the red color jersey and then there's a lot of stars. It's
indeed.
I've noticed really indeed, stars. Indeed, what's the meaning of the stars?
This is the seven cups that we are the most awarded African Cup nations.
Oh,
so we won the cup seven times. This is seven times. And three of them consecutively. 2006, 2008, 2010.
Oh, hat tricks.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So that's
this is also our national pride as our national team, for our national team.
Okay then.
Allow me to give you the a humble gift. Our
jersey,
yes. National jersey.
I always love it.
I hope you wear it tomorrow.
Yay!
In the match.
We have to watch it, right? Okay, so this is the meaning of the stars. The seven stars is actually
the seven cups we won in Africa.
Okay, this is the seven cups.
Yes, African Cup. African Cup, yes.
Okay. Well, this is the... hang on a second. I forgot. Fourth jersey or fifth jersey for me? I forgot. Five. Okay, this is the fifth jersey for me. Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador.
Pleasure.
All right, then. Well, Mr. Ambassador, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for hosting
here.
Me today.
Yes, thank you very much for coming here. And of course, later, maybe if you reach the semifinal, we will ask you to do something else here with your opponent.
With pleasure.
There's a time.
With pleasure. And as I mentioned before, let's hope that in 2030, we will see Indonesia playing the World Cup.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you so much for receiving me today. Thank you.
Well, my listener, that was our Soccer Fiesta for today. I'll see you on the next Soccer Fiesta.
Walau kadang ingin ku mati. Digital era, artificial intelligence or AI is becoming increasingly familiar in the world of education. From schools to universities, chatbots, apps, and learning machines are now part of everyday experience for teachers and students. AI is often praised for making learning faster and more practical, but this raises a big question. Does AI truly support education? Or is it introducing new ethical challenges and reshaping the kind of social capital we need for the future? AI in education is often associated with efficiency, faster, more practical, and giving access to endless information. But what does this mean from the perspective of a lecturer who works with students every day?
Saya itu juga menggunakan AI ya.
I also use AI. When I'm preparing lecture material for my students, I usually start with textbooks and theories from well-known experts, especially in the courses I teach. But beyond the standard materials, it's important to enrich the content with the latest information, often from recent research. These days, AI makes that process easier. I can simply ask about the most up-to-date studies on a particular topic or find real-life cases that are relevant to the material I'm teaching.
AI provides shortcut to the latest information, even cutting-edge research that used to take a long time to uncover.
Jadi cukup ada perbedaan ya.
There's quite a difference now. In the past, our sources for lectures came only from books or academic journals, but with AI, we can access the most recent developments and obtain information much faster. For example, I can simply type on my laptop, "Find me the latest research on cases of paranoid schizophrenia and the recommended intervention for patients with that condition." Through AI, we can quickly get that information and even ask where it came from. Of course, we shouldn't take everything AI presents at face value. We still need to verify where its references come from. It's even better if we trace those sources ourselves. So AI really helps us find relevant information on the topics we're discussing in class much faster than before.
Students experience the same thing. AI has become a tool that makes the learning process more efficient.
Sebenarnya untuk penggunaan AI sendiri, bagi saya itu sangat penting.
Actually, for me, using AI is really important. From my experience, when I'm writing a paper or an article, I always have to think about the outline first. But when I hit a creative block, That's when I turned to AI. There are also a few AI tools that really help me find articles, especially when the deadline is tight. As a student, we have so many assignments, right? So I use AI to look for reference materials. It really saved me a lot of time for searching, reading, and understanding the articles I need.
Okay, penggunaan AI dalam perkuliahan.
Okay, talking about using AI in lectures, I've used it a few times, but mostly I use it for discussions. Personally, I treat AI as a discussion partner when studying the course material. Sometimes there are topics that make me feel like I need someone to talk to exchange ideas. And when no one's around, that's when I turn to AI. That's just how I use it.
Honestly, things have become much easier now. AI really helps a lot, but still, it's better to double-check. For example, when I ask AI a question, I can see how the tool works and give answers. After that, I go back to books or journals to confirm the information. So yes, AI is very helpful, but we still need to verify what it gives us.
Yet, efficiency cannot be separated from ethics. How far should students go in using AI? And how do lecturers assess honesty?
When I assign group discussions, I do allow students to use AI to find information sources, but they must trace where the data actually comes from and read the original material carefully. Usually, AI helps them paraphrase or summarize journal articles they've read. However, from my own experience, AI doesn't always provide a complete or accurate summary, so I always remind my students to read the article themselves and cross-check AI summary against the real content. Sometimes AI misses key points or gives incomplete conclusions. As for group work, there's no fixed rule like 50-50 between AI and personal work, but students must state if they use AI and to what extent. The bottom line is their writing should never be entirely AI-generated.
This ethical issue is also about the rules and assessment mechanisms.
Pertama kita harus beritahu dulu.
First, we need to clearly explain the rules to students. What are the boundaries when using AI? For example, if they want to balance their work 50-50 between their own ideas and AI-generated content, or follow academic standards that limit AI use to a maximum of 10%. Once those rules are made clear, the expectation is that students can understand and adjust their assignments accordingly. As lecturers, we also have tools to check whether a student's work is fully AI-generated, mostly written by AI, or still includes their own original thinking. There are even AI detection programs that I use to evaluate their submission.
Awalnya tergoda gitu, tetapi saya balik lagi berpikir bahwa
at first I was tempted, but then I thought again, what's the real purpose of going to college? That's why I didn't want to just ask AI and copy whatever it gives me. I tried to think first about which point I can actually take and use from AI. In the end, AI should only be supporting tool, not something we rely on completely for the answers.
Balik lagi, AI digunakan untuk berdiskusi.
If all our work comes from AI, I disagree. AI should be like a discussion partner. We need to be smart in selecting its responses. Taking everything as is would be plagiarism.
Apa yang kita cari, terus kemudian kita copy.
Copying something directly from AI and passing it into assignment isn't right. I mean, when we work on an assignment, it should always include proper theories and references. Sure, we can ask AI questions like what is nursing, or explain and provide sources, but we still need to make sure its answers are accurate. And of course, we can rely on AI alone. We also need to check journals and books, just like I mentioned earlier.
Beyond efficiency and ethics, there's also social capital built in classrooms, trust, teamwork, and honesty among students.
Mahasiswa itu kadang-kadang
ketika mereka kerja kelompok ada temannya yang
sometimes in group projects there's always one student who relies entirely on AI for their part. Usually we divide the task. One handles the introduction, another the method section and so on. But often someone submits work that's 100% AI generated. Then the group just compiles it together. To prevent that, I ask every member to fully understand each part of the project. Whoever is responsible for a section must explain it to their teammates. That way, even if they use AI to summarize or write, they're still required to understand what they've written.
Balik lagi ke niat kita sebagai mahasiswa.
It all comes back to our intentions as students. Why are we in college in the first place? Is it just to earn a diploma, to get a degree, or because we truly want to learn? If it's about gaining knowledge, then go through the process wholeheartedly. Find ways to really grow through your studies. But if it's only about the title, honestly, it might not be worth pursuing at all.
Alat bantu bukan jalan pintas.
AI is a tool, not a shortcut. Personally, I believe we must always keep our sense of reason. We are human beings. We have minds that define the boundary between us and AI. If we rely on AI completely, then in a way, we are letting it outsmart us. Or worse, letting it take control. So we have to use our rationality.
Sebenarnya kalau untuk menggunakannya dalam kesehariannya belum.
Actually, it's fine to use AI in our daily work. But my advice is don't just copy and paste from it. The information isn't always accurate. It's better to use AI wisely. For example, when we don't know where to start researching something, we can ask AI just to get the basic idea or the right tools. After that, we should look for proper references in journals, books, or e-books. So don't rely purely on AI. It's okay to use it for a quick overview, but never for copying answers.
From classrooms to campuses, AI is like a double-edged sword. It brings great efficiency, yet challenges academic ethics and shapes students' social capital. Education cannot reject technology, but we can choose how to use it. And now, the question is, will we use AI as a learning companion or merely as a shortcut? The choice is ours.
Listener, thank you very much for listening to our program. And if you have something to say, you can check our or go to our email, voalisteners@gmail.com. We'll be waiting for your inputs, reception reports, and perhaps questions about Indonesia. So make sure to stay here with us on RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.